Prime Minister Scott Morrison will fly to the UK this week, where he'll be a guest at the G7 summit, the first major face-to-face gathering of world leaders since the COVID pandemic began 18 months ago. Locking in the global recovery from the coronavirus will be the theme of this year's meeting, with host Boris Johnson calling on rich nations to vaccinate the entire world by the end of next year. Ahead of the talks, a new international alliance of global business, science and political leaders is urging the G7 to view COVID-19 as a wake-up call to start taking biosecurity and population health much more seriously. The Australian former Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, is the co-chair of the Reform for Resilience Commission. Malcolm Turnbull, welcome back to Breakfast.
Good morning, Hamish. Great to be with you.
The Reform Commission is calling on the G7 summit to be a Bretton Woods moment for global health. That seems pretty ambitious. What does that mean in practice?
Well, it's a wake-up call, as you just said. And what we're saying is we've got to make sure that we learn the lessons of this pandemic and develop a more resilient health and economic system so that we are protected for the pandemics that will come in the future. I mean, with globalization, a virus can spread at the speed of a jet aeroplane. So we cannot treat this as just a 1-in-100-year event and, you know, forget about for another 99 years. We've got to make sure we don't waste this crisis. And that is why we need to, firstly, as you said at the outset, make sure that the whole world is vaccinated. So with that has got to be the highest priority. And then put in place the health, you know, the health resilience that will protect us in the future.
Given all of the debt and deficit that's been racked up globally during this pandemic, how do we actually do that? There's not a lot of spare money floating around.
Well, the reality is, until we're all vaccinated, we're only safe when we're all safe. So, you know, just the same issue that we're having here with, you know, vaccine hesitancy applies globally. So we all have a vested interest in everybody being vaccinated. And, you know, that's one of the other things that we've recommended. And this commission, which was convened by George Freeman, the former health minister in the UK, and is co-chaired by myself and Jose Manuel Barroso, former European Commission President, and Michelle Williams, who's the Dean of Public Health at Harvard. One of the other recommendations we're making is to engage or implement vaccine passporting. I mean, you can't force people to have vaccines, but we have to be, and we have been in Australia. We have to be tough about this and make it very clear that there are some things you will not be able to do if you are not vaccinated. No jab, no play with childhood vaccines.
What would be the purpose of a vaccine passport in Australia? For domestic travel, is that what you're talking about, or only international travel?
It could be relevant for domestic travel when you get outbreaks, but it's obviously going to be very relevant for international travel. And I mean, this is one of the reasons, you know, one of the problems we've faced already is that, for example, until recently, there not only were workers in the aged care sector not being vaccinated, and which, you know, is a major oversight, but they didn't know which ones had been vaccinated. So, you know, we need to be able to have good records so that people can say authoritatively and accurately whether or not they have been vaccinated. I mean, you know, this is, and I know people will say, you know, this is tough, this is sort of non-libertarian, but I remember, you know, years ago, people got up in arms and objected to being required to wear seatbelts. But, you know, you can't force people to be vaccinated. I get that. But, you know, if you want to work in healthcare, if you want to work in aged care, if you want to get on an aeroplane, if you want to go to a cinema, we are entitled to say, well, you know, if you haven't been vaccinated, you can't do it. I mean, because just to protect the rest of the community.
Many people will see this as punitive. I suspect particularly many people on your side of politics, this idea that you can only return or to sort of resume business as usual if you have a document saying you've had a jab. You understand the concerns.
Well, Hamish, that's a fair point, and I think you're right to some extent, but It was certainly the coalition side of politics that imposed no jab, no pay for childcare, and I recall strengthening these provisions when I was PM. So, you know, if you bring a child that is unvaccinated into a, you know, a, you know, early learning centre or, you know, childcare centre, and that child, you know, brings in their, you know, whooping cough or something like that. And there have been cases like that. If you've got a baby there who has not yet had all its vaccines, you can have really tragic consequences, and they have been there. So, you know, we just have to be very, very clear-eyed about this. You know, the turning... Look, one of the most revealing statements in the recent US election about the craziness in which so much of politics has descended in recent years was when Joe Biden said wearing a mask is not a political statement. Now, the fact that he had to say it speaks volumes. And so, you know, one of the key findings from our report is that the countries that have done best with this pandemic are those that have followed the science, and where populations, communities, have trusted their governments because the governments have followed the science and provided accurate information on matters of public health.
That should apply
to climate as well, of course.
To this very point, though, the Commission is calling on countries to share pandemic and biosecurity data. Does that
Absolutely.
Include China, which is not a member of
course,
the G7?
Totally. Well, of course it should. I mean, again, we all have a vested interest in each other's health, and you know borders do matter. Borders are real, but regrettably, viruses do not pay any attention to them. So you know we really need to be in a position where as soon as viruses emerge or signs emerge of a new virus, that information is communicated globally instantly. Now. You know, the reality is with COVID, Hamish, we had a situation where every country in the world more or less has faced the same challenge at the same time. So this has been a bit like a global exam, you know, like the old examination hall where at 9 o'clock the invigilator looks at her watch and says, right, pick up your pens, you can start writing. Every country in the world faced this at the same time, and we have... Some countries did terribly with the pandemic, like the UK and the USA, but have done brilliantly with vaccinations. We did well with the pandemic, but we are dragging our feet woefully on vaccinations, as everybody knows. So there's lots of learnings from this, and lots of lessons, I should say. And one of the things we're doing with this commission is making sure that they're examined and, you know, presented and encouraging world leaders, particularly the G7 this week, to get on with it.
The G7 finance ministers have also agreed on a new minimum corporate tax rate, 15%. In principle, they'll take that to the G20. They say that this is about extracting more from the big tech giants by untethering their profits and revenue from having physical bases in countries. And so they're going to be taxed on where they derive the profit, not just where they're based. A global corporate tax rate of 15% is well below what the corporate tax rate is here in Australia. Does this actually prevent a race to the bottom on corporate tax, or does it actually just undercut the whole thing?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a really good move. I mean, you could argue that the 15 should be 17.5 or 20, but it's designed to put a floor in it to essentially address tax havens where, you know, taxes are either zero or very, very low. So it's designed to, stop this sort of constant race to the bottom. I mean, Australia's corporate tax rate is high relatively to others.
But we're already
hearing
the business community say, look, now Australia's got to move lower because of this global minimum rate.
No, the business community is always in favour of lower taxes, right? So that's hardly surprising. But the issue for us with corporate tax, and this is why I reduced, when I was PM, I reduced or started the process of reducing company tax to 25%. I mean, sadly, we didn't get it all done because of couldn't get it through the Senate. But the critical thing for us is to have a competitive tax rate. I think this is a very good move. As far as the tech, big tech companies are concerned, again, we made some changes when I was PM and Scott was Treasurer to prevent them profit shifting. But a global agreement on that is vitally important. I mean, you know, I don't want to pick any one company out, but Facebook, for example, it should pay tax on its profits in Australia, not in Ireland or Singapore. And that applies, by the way, to Australian resources companies, some of which have used trading hubs in Singapore and elsewhere to shift profits into low tax jurisdictions. I mean, it is this, base erosion and profit shifting has been a big agenda for the global community. The Americans, interestingly, have always been the biggest opponents of action on it. But Biden is being, with Janet Yellen as his Treasury Secretary, has been much more progressive and cooperative. So I think, we should seize that opportunity. I mean, we are not a low-tax country, so we have a vested interest in other countries, cooperating to make sure that tax can't be avoided.
Malcolm Turnbull, briefly, if we can, Scott Morrison is travelling to the G7 summit. Of course, Australia, not a member of the G7, will be participating, though, on the edges of all of this. We know the pressure that Scott Morrison is facing from the likes of Boris Johnson and Joe Biden over climate policies. How long do you see him holding out against international pressure that's being brought to commit to a net zero target by 2050?
Well, look, it's really a political equation. I mean, Morrison faces this this problem inside the coalition that it is held hostage by that combination, the fossil fuel lobby, News Corporation, the Murdoch media operation, and, right-wing politics in the coalition, which has turned issues about coal and global warming and climate change, which should be questions of physics, into effectively questions of religion or political values. And he's, he's trying to navigate that craziness as best he can. And I think it's, he's under huge international pressure and it will only increase. And I think at some point, hopefully, that will persuade the right wing and the coalition, which holds those parties to ransom, or hostage effectively, to succumb to reality.
Do you think, though, things like carbon tariffs might actually force Australia's hand ultimately?
Yeah, I think, sure. I think that's been an issue for a while, but I think it's very live now. I mean, let me put it this way, Hamish. If you're a politician, protectionism can be very popular for you domestically because you say, I'm putting up a tariff, I'm going to protect local jobs, protect local businesses. But people will obviously criticise it as being utterly selfish and self-interested. If you can impose a tariff, which does all those things, but at the same time say you are saving the planet, well, that sounds much more appealing. So the incentive for the Europeans, who are absolutely committed to this, to proceed with carbon tariffs at the front here is very profound, and it has growing support in Washington. Now, I was talking to some of my friends in the Biden administration just last week, and views are still, I would say, still divided on that, but the momentum is in favour of it, because what they can say is they'll say, we have a commitment to getting to net zero, we're taking all these issues to reduce emissions, and why should somebody who isn't doing that, who's dragging their feet, like Australia or whoever, pick another country, why should they be able to import goods into our country without paying a price? And look, politically, it is so easy to sell domestically that you'd have to be very naive not to recognise it's coming up in the lift.
Okay, Malcolm Turnbull, thank you very much.
Great, Hamish. Good to talk to you.
That's the former Prime Minister and co-chair of the Reform for Resilience Commission.